Barone, naturopathic physician, and we were both professional herbalists with the American Herbalist Guild, and we are wishing you the best. We're always so excited to hear from you. Many people download this show, hundreds of thousands exactly, and we love to have even more, so tell your friends about it. They can find the archives of today's show on prn.fm, and you can also always contact us at naturalnurse.com. We have online and on-ground classes. Online classes go on more or less every single day, where people can get certifications in herbal medicine. Also, CE credits. Those are CE broker professional credits for nurses, midwives, acupuncturists, licensed massage therapists, and RDs and clinical nutritionists. So all of you can get CE credits by taking our online classes or on-ground classes. And we have lots going on in Florida for the winter because we do teach at the Hippocrates Institute. We also teach at the Open Center in Manhattan. So really, by going to naturalnurse.com calendar, you can find many classes. And by emailing us, we can set up an educational program. Many people join in on the group classes, and others take the classes individually, or we do them for your group as well. So any of these ways is a great kind of way to get involved, and we love to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us. And today we have as our guest David Forman, the herbal pharmacist. And David has been on our show today, but we'll be discussing different topics. And he started his career as a registered pharmacist, and now he uses his expertise in physiology, pharmacology, and integrative medicine to educate consumers on cutting-edge approaches to natural health and healing. He's a graduate of the University of South Carolina College of Pharmacy and practiced as a conventional pharmacist for 16 years. He owned and operated one of Medicine Shop International's top 70 pharmacies for 9 years, and he is well-versed on the healing power of herbs, vitamins, and other natural products. Now, David lectures at some of America's leading universities, medical groups, and hospitals on the subject of natural health and healing. David says, "I believe that education is the key to understanding that natural health plays a role in traditional medicine," and of course also in conventional medicine, because herbal medicine is traditional medicine. As a pharmacist, author, television commentator, radio host, and practitioner, David brings information to professionals and the public about how to use natural therapies to promote and sustain health. And on today's show, we'll discuss many topics, including arthritis and natural healing modalities. Thank you so much for joining us today, David.
Oh, Ellen, thank you so much for having me on. And I've actually been a fan of yours now. I think I was on as a guest probably a couple of years ago, and I do follow you on Facebook and Twitter. So, and
I do have a Twitter account, but I personally don't actually know how to use it. I have,
I do have you followed, but I see your stuff on Facebook all the time, and that's where you seem to do a lot more posting of the stuff that is actually on your website as well. So
I actually figured out how to use Facebook, so I use that all the time. But I see you have a Twitter account. We should give that out. It's HerbalPH.
Herbal RPH.
So one of these days, perhaps I'll venture into the Twitter world. I'm not sure I really want to know. Although I don't know if it works for presidential candidates, I guess it might work for natural health providers as well. So I'll have to look into it. Now talk about your evolvement, because go back in time before you decided to go to pharmacy school to prepare yourself as a living. What made you move in that direction?
Just to go to pharmacy school initially?
Yes. They even go to pharmacy school.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's cool. I hardly ever get that question, and it's interesting. I grew up in an area outside of Allentown, Pennsylvania, and we had a neighbor of ours that lived behind us that had a really cool lifestyle. He had a nice house, he had a nice piece of land, just a peaceful lifestyle, and he was our small town pharmacist. He owned the pharmacy. And so part of it was, honestly, you know, I really appreciated the lifestyle this guy had. And then the second part of it was, since I was a little kid, we're talking, you know, 3 years old, I can remember my family members calling me Dr. Dave. I even had a little plastic medicine kit, you know, doctor's bag kind of thing that I would carry around with me as a kid. And so when I was looking at going to college, I looked at going to medical doctor. And I was between a degree in biology / pre-med and pharmacy. And I learned that I kind of put the two together. I'm like, well, I really like the lifestyle this guy has. So pharmacy seems a little bit more appealing to me, because if I don't end up deciding to become a medical doctor, being a pharmacist seems like it's, you know, pretty awesome profession. And so that I guess would be the combination of you know, what happened. And then in pharmacy school, you know, I just kind of fell in love with that aspect of the healthcare industry. I have a very the way my brain's wired is high in mathematical and science, and you really need a good background in both of those to be a pharmacist. And every now and then I regret not going on to medical school, but at the same time, you know, I don't think if I had done that, I'd be where I am today. And I love helping people either keep their health or achieve the health that they're looking for. And I feel like if I'd have gone down that modern medicine, medical doctor route, I may not have ended up where I am today, just because of the
right.
training I
we
got.
We don't know
University
in hindsight, but I will say, in terms of really current polls, it appears that the American public actually has more confidence in pharmacists. Pharmacists and nurses are the most trusted healthcare providers.
Oh, I know, and it's been that way since I remember when I got out of college, and started working. And I, you know, it's been like every year now since I graduated from pharmacy school that what you just said is true. And I always found it amazing that, like, we were more respected than clergy, you know, or whatever. Like, I was like, wow, people trust me more than somebody they go to church with. But yeah, and again with the nurses too, some of my best friends are RNs, and I find that the RN tends to be even a more nurturing, caring individual than most of the pharmacists that I know. Most pharmacists actually don't like what I do for a living.
Well, I'll tell you why. I think it's really an amazing history, because in the history of pharmacy, I believe that it was actually a much more interesting day-to-day interaction than current modern pharmacists are having, because the schooling is intensive. Intensive. I mean, you definitely get an excellent education. And then what used to happen is that all pharmacists were actually herbalists, just like you
right.
are the herbal pharmacist. But all pharmacists were herbalists in the old
yep.
days.
Yep.
And they actually mixed together, which, by the way, still goes on in Chinese apothecaries when we take people on tours into Chinatown. The Chinese pharmacists get a list of plant medicines that have to be pulled from bulk and made into a specific prescription for each individual in terms of different plants, in different amounts, with different dosing indications. So there was a lot of that went on in pharmacies not that long ago.
No, and it's really interesting. I actually just a few weeks ago, I went back to my college of pharmacy. I had already planned to go back to go to a football game, but it just so happened the same weekend I was going to Columbia, South Carolina, that the my College of Pharmacy was celebrating its 150th anniversary. And so I attended, and it was really interesting because my college is now starting a new initiative, which is not just the pharmacognosy, which was you know what they did teach. It's funny that you know they taught it up until probably only 10 years before I went to college, and then they all stopped and just went straight into the synthetic man-made drugs. But my university actually reached out to me now to come back and to help teach the students. It's something that we're going to talk about, just to open their eyes. And for people that don't believe that herbs have a place in this stuff, I mean, granted, you just brought up Chinese medicine, which is, 5,000 years old or older. There's Ayurvedic medicine, which is more from India, again, another 5,000 years. And if that still isn't good enough for people, keep in mind that about 30% of the drugs we have today that are sold either originated in a plant or the philosophy for why they synthesized a drug is from a plant. So there's an awful lot to be said for plant-based medicine. It does work. It's been working for thousands of years. It's not something that's just happened in the most recent past.
Yes, and definitely there's so much room for education. I was actually asked to give a lecture at a pharmacy school in Miami, and I have lectured at pharmacy schools around the country. And what they really want me to cover is herb-drug interactions, which I actually created a 100-hour course on. So this isn't just a light topic. But the thing is, they usually want it to come from a perspective about how dangerous it is to mix herb and drugs together, and in some cases that's true. But my bias is actually to minimize the pharmaceuticals when possible and maximize the use of herbs and natural therapies instead, because the actual profile of adverse effects is much better, as well as the cost containment being better.
Oh, for sure. I remember doing the same thing. I've done a lot of medical-related seminars, and I've done segments like you're talking about, and I can remember people looking at me like a deer in the headlights when I said, when you asked me to come here and talk about the interactions between, I'll say supplements. I'm going to even go outside the box of just herbs and say supplements and medications, whether they're over-the-counter or prescribed. I'm like, everybody always thinks that interactions is a negative thing, and a good portion of what I would teach people is that, kind of along the lines of what you were just saying, Ellen, is that some of these interactions are actually the positives, like taking a probiotic when you're on an antibiotic. Why? Well, so you don't develop a secondary infection, either urinary tract or yeast or bowel, or there's people that are resistant to the, they have depression to the point where a lot of the medications don't work. Well, there's herbs in the plant kingdom that will actually decrease medication resistance. Goes along the same lines of what you just said, which is, hey, you know what, if I take this herb along and this medication, I may not require as much of it because I'm going to get this effect. And so, it's cool that you did 100 hours. I would have completely enjoyed sitting in on that. I think that we, even though you've been doing what you do for a long time and vice versa, I feel like we all have an awful lot to learn from each other. So next time you're doing that one, I might want to audit your class.
Well, I would love you to, and you can also keep me in mind because I am really involved in doing this at colleges of pharmacies as well as medical schools, because I really think with the deep knowledge that we have, like you talk about so much on your website, theherbalpharmacist.com, or just herbalpharmacist.com, that, the science supports this. And it is helpful both, let's say, for the country in terms of the cost, if nothing more, and the cost of health care, but of course for the individual because of the better safety profile. And the only loser there is the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I feel like, you know, we definitely are preaching to the choir with each other on this one. And I am, you know, especially now that, you know, the election's passed and the whole, and I don't want to get into politics, so I hope you're okay with that. But within the politics thing right now, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, the healthcare industry and the cost of it. And I've often felt that, you know, there needs to be a motivational factor within the healthcare industry, whether it's insurance, pharmaceutical, somewhere, that gives people an incentive to even try to be healthier and to try these other modalities. My ex-wife works for one of the major insurance carriers. I'm not going to say which one, but they have a really cool program in that she can get a significant discount off of her annual deductible by, you know, achieving certain goals within health, meaning how many days a week do you work out? You know, what's your normal weight? Are you a smoker or not? And I feel like if people had more and more of those incentives, that we would end up being healthier. But regretfully, I think the majority are probably not the people that listen to your show. The majority of the people that don't care. The majority of, I feel like, our country are the people who would sooner take a pill than do anything proactive to cure their ill, you know, and that makes me sad, you know, when I see people that are willing to just sit on their butts and continue to live the same, you know, well, I don't want to use bad words, but, you know, just live the same unhealthy lifestyle. And I feel like part of what we need to do in our country besides just have this insurance plan is to have incentives for people to actually take an active role in their health and be rewarded for that. You know, it's like a little kid a lot of times, you know, that people use a reward system. I did that. I have a chocolate lab. She's laying right next to me as we do this interview. And I trained her. I trained her with treats, you know, and now I don't require treats to get her to do anything, you know. But it's that reward until you form the habit. And I think that's what we need to look at doing. And in order to integrate all these amazing things that you talk about and I talk about.
Well, let's get real specific, because I know one of the topics you wanted to talk about today is arthritis. And everything that we're going to talk about also has to do with inflammation. So as a pharmacist and a holistic health practitioner and researcher, how many chronic illnesses are linked to inflammation?
Well, yeah, I feel like almost all of them could be. You know, like, let's take the top four killing diseases in the country. Heart disease, number one. Inflammation is a major role player in that one. Stroke is, I always include stroke in cardiovascular disease, but some people don't. But if we're going to do it the way modern medicine does it, stroke, again, inflammation. Cancer, number two killer, inflammation. Diabetes, I think, is now number four. Inflammation. I mean, and then there's even just the non-killing diseases like cataracts and arthritis. And I guess the best thing for people to understand is that, you know, inflammation. So when we hear a medical professional say something that ends in itis, whether it's bronchitis, arthritis, prostatitis, anything that ends in ITIS, that ITIS stands for inflammation. So a word that ends in itis, like bronchitis, means bronchial inflammation. You know, if I have prostatitis, that just means I have inflammation of my prostate. And you know, to answer your question, I think almost all of our diseases and or health challenges have a link back to inflammation in the body.
So much so. And that's one of the things that motivated myself and Dr. Eugene Samperon to write our book, Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, because every illness can really benefit by looking at what we can do about arthritis. And what you're talking about is so important, because although arthritis is not something that like will kill someone a year later, it certainly makes life very painful and uncomfortable. But the good news is there is so much data about decreasing inflammation with natural living and actually reversing arthritis, which it doesn't seem you're allowed to say that if you're a medical professional.
That, you know, it is true. And you know, it goes back to lifestyle choices. And you're right. And I often have told people, I always tell people, you know, this is one of my favorite stories going back to when I actually owned my pharmacy. And I can remember, you know, my son saying to me, "Daddy, how does the Advil know I have a headache?" You know, yeah. I remember having a customer saying, "Well, how does my body know the Aleve, you know, knows to work in my joints?" And I'm like, "It doesn't." I said, you know, when we do something proactive for inflammation, your body's going to prioritize and it's going to say, "All right, this is where it's the worst," and it's going to go there. So I've had people take things for arthritis, joint health, and they might not realize a benefit on their joints for quite some time. And they'll come back and they'll say, "I don't understand." I'm like, "Well, you know what? I kind of wonder if you have inflammation in your joints, there's a good chance you've got inflammation in other parts of your body as well. It's just that it manifested itself in your joints." So if someone has joint inflammation, you know, I'm thinking, you know what, you probably have a lot of cardiovascular inflammation as well. So, you know what, you're probably more likely to have plaque buildup in your arteries, and you're more likely to, you know, have a heart attack or stroke. And, you know, when we start looking at these diseases like diabetes, and diabetics usually have a lot of inflammation because sugar and other things that go along with the insulin levels being, out of alignment causes a lot of inflammation. And so, you know, they're more prone to having heart disease and cancer and arthritis and all these things. So they're all really interrelated. And so when I give a talk on, like today, arthritis, a lot of what I can talk about would apply to any inflammatory condition. And that's, you know, that's probably the biggest thing, is like it really does take changing your lifestyle. And I'm familiar with your book, Ellen, and the information in that I think is priceless, not just in the category of arthritis, but priceless in the category of just health.
Well, thank you. Now, you're always looking at the literature, and there's some really interesting new studies coming out. For instance, there was an article talking about that fish even get arthritis. And, you know, it's so ancient that mummy called the Iceman was actually found to have arthritis. So this is not a new or exclusive thing.
No, it's not. And, you know, and I think that what we need to, you know, gather from all of it is that, you know, back in those days, there probably weren't as many incidences of arthritis. And I think a lot of it's because, you know, we didn't really have, the crappy diet that we have nowadays with all these foods that contribute to inflammation. You know, we ate a lot more fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and leaves and things like that. And we really didn't eat too much animal protein because it was hard to catch, you know.
The other thing I have to say is people didn't live as long either, because by 35 they were usually out. You know, talking about Cro-Magnon Man and those times. So they had less time to develop it, because certainly the incidence does increase both with wear and tear and age. So, you know, there's all kinds of reasons. And we will continue our discussion, Dave, because we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we're going to continue and go into some really interesting topics, such as something that might surprise you, like the link between gut flora and arthritis and inflammation. We are here with our guest today, David Foreman, the herbal pharmacist, and we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnamic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back. Thanks so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And as always, we are wishing you the best and love to hear from you. Go to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and join the many people who ask us their own questions. We do have offices both in New York, Florida, and Connecticut, and people come in for a visit, or we do so much now online by either Skype or email or phone, whatever still works for you. We even have an 800 number, 800-829-0918, for those of you who still use phones. I know that number is dwindling, but nonetheless, we have that available. And we've written many, many books. We wrote two books this year. One is called Supplements for Pain, and one is called Keys to Vitality and Virility. So those are our two newest books. They are on the website under naturalnurse.com. I think then it's products and books. And those two books happen to be available both in hardcover format as well as e-books, if that's what you prefer. So we're moving ahead into the modern age, and maybe begrudgingly at times, but nonetheless, because my favorite thing is to be outside with the plants, where we actually gather plants and make them into medicine. And we give classes on how to do that, make your own medicine, the old-fashioned way that many of the pharmacists did historically. And we give classes on that all over the country. We have one coming up at Hippocrates Health Institute And we did a lecture recently in New York City at the Open Center. The one for Hippocrates is coming up in January of 2017. So you can join us on ground for that if you're in that area. Today we have as our guest the herbal pharmacist David Forman. And he's been talking to us about inflammation. You can always find out more because this show will be archived if you hear something you want to come back and listen to it again or tell your friends. And you can always find Dave Forman at herbalpharmacist.com or Twitter, it's herbalrph, and also Facebook, The Herbal Pharmacist. So Dave is an easy guy to find, and he has lots of information. So thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you again very much.
Now, we were beginning our in-depth discussion about inflammation, and, you know, you talked a little bit about that recent article. Now, what about, you know, in the holistic circles, this is becoming old news, but I'm not sure all our listeners are fully familiar with this concept about the fact that gut bacteria can cause, predict, and prevent inflammation and even rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah, the latest is the study on the rheumatoid has not been done in humans, but they did do it in mice, and they found that that you could prevent rheumatoid arthritis with having a healthy gut bacteria. Again, we're talking about probiotics here, and then regards to just inflammation in the body and. And why we'd want to have enough of these friendly bacteria, you know, in your small and large intestine. There's so many possible reasons reasons you really want to. One is the friendly bacteria will help suppress any pathogens or disease-causing elements that make their way into your body and eventually into your small and large intestine. They help the intestinal wall and the integrity of it. It's like having a screen in your window. When the integrity of your screen and your window goes bad, you know, bugs get into your house. Same thing with your body. And when things that normally shouldn't be floating around in your bloodstream get in there, those things will cause inflammation. Toxins that are put out by the disease-causing bacteria, the pathogens, those increase the amount of toxins that are in the body. And again, by having enough of these friendly bacteria, we can do a lot in many different ways at keeping inflammation down. And also getting the right nutritional ingredients into your bloodstream. Without those friendly bacteria, you could have the best diet and take all the right supplements, but if your body can't break those down into microparticles and or convert some of the nutrients in those foods or supplements into the right form, then you've kind of wasted your money. So I always actually taking a probiotic on an everyday basis is one of the four foundational things I teach people to do because, again, you could have the best, cleanest diet, organic, you know, whatever, and or you could be taking all the right herbs and other supplements, but if you can't digest them and absorb them, doesn't really matter, does it?
It's true. But what's so interesting is that, of course, being involved, as you have been so many years, with an interest in natural medicine and keeping your finger on the pulse of the studies, what's so amazing about this is this is actually coming out of Mayo Clinic Center for Individualized Medicine, and the studies have been published in mainstream journals, including Genome Medicine and Arthritis and Rheumatology. So you are not just, you know, grasping at the fringe to bring us this information.
No, yeah, I mean, I think everybody respects the Mayo Clinic, so we could just start there, right? So, yeah, this is not just some airy-fairy, you know, thing I make up. This goes back to my pharmacy degree, and Ellen, I think that's where your nursing degree. You know, as healthcare professionals, I still have my credibility to me means more than anything. And so if I'm going to mention to you that this supplement or, you know, it's got to be backed by clinical research. It's just not going to be because my next door neighbor took it and it worked for her. It's because there's an awful lot of research that's been done to show that, hey, what, you know what, this is something we need to look at. This is something you need to do. This is something you need to take.
But something you brought up in your discussion a moment ago, Dave, is that, you know, there's something called probiotics. Most people know what those are. They've heard the word. But when you go to the health food store to purchase one, you know, there's like a million choices. How can you even begin to decide which one may actually be absorbed and might actually, you know, make a positive change in your health?
You know, that's a really good question. And regretfully, you know, it's going to depend on the store you walk into. You know, I don't get real brand specific with people. You know,
well, we don't do that on this show either,
okay.
But sometimes
all right,
we
good.
Give them hints of things to look at in a label. I'll tell you the truth. My favorite probiotics
go for it.
Is
yeah, I'm just curious.
Get really good, high quality sauerkraut or kimchi, which is fermented cabbage that is loaded with positive bacteria. Of course,
right.
From a pharmaceutical point of view, you can't know the exact dosage there.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, and I guess, and there's so many conflicting stories out there. Do I buy a probiotic that's from the refrigerated section or not? Do I buy one that's shelf stable or not? There's a technology I learned about from my pharmacy background that gets used in the tableting of probiotics nowadays, and the technology is called BioTrack. So that's not a brand, it's the technology. So personally, I use a probiotic. I'm not going to give the brand out, but I use a probiotic that I buy. Actually, I can buy this at a mainstream pharmacy or I can buy it at a health food store. But the technology is called BioTrack, and it's guaranteed to protect those bacteria from stomach acid. You want them to get through your stomach acid. And the reason that, like you mentioned, those fermented foods, the reason those normally work well, and again, you know, if you go to most stores and buy just sauerkraut nowadays, it's not made the way it used to be, you know, not the way grandma or great-grandma used to make it. You know, and so those bacteria really aren't in there anymore, or yogurt. You know, a lot of people buy yogurt these days, or even kimchi these days. You pick it, it's the stuff that oftentimes isn't made the way it was, so those bacteria really weren't there. But so for me nowadays, I just throw caution to the wind, and I buy a probiotic that uses that technology because, and then the technology, you know, that's part of it. But then the second thing is, well, how many bacteria do I need? And you know, it does get confusing. I did write an article. I think it's on my website, herbalpharmacist.com, and there's a blog. And I have this very lengthy blog on how to pick a probiotic. So maybe that's a good place for people to start. It's not promoting any one brand over another. It's just talking about what to look for in a probiotic.
Yeah, and it is important because sometimes the least expensive is more of a waste of money than spending a little bit more. And when you do find one that works for you, what I find from patients is, you know, they actually start to feel better. So it's not just a matter of, you know, it's not just a matter of, oh, well, I don't know if anything happened or not. Very often they'll have less digestive, like stomach distension after eating. That's a very common one once they're starting to get their bowel flora a more positive species.
It's true. You know, it's funny. A funny, cute story. I mentioned my chocolate lab, who's now snoring next to me. She must be bored with me today. But the woman who watches her when I go away is also her groomer. And her groomer was having problems with really bad acid reflux to the point where the reflux was actually getting into her sinuses and causing polyps. And so one day I went by, and I didn't even know this until like 6 weeks ago, and she was telling me she was going in to have this surgery. And I, after doing a quick, you know, consultation with her, I said, I'll be back tomorrow. I'm going to bring you some stuff to take, and one of which was a probiotic. And it was funny because without even knowing she had digestive problems, just because she had this reflux thing going on, probiotic was definitely part of my answer. And when I talked to her when I got back from my trip and picked up Hershey, she was like, oh my gosh, she said within 3 days I could feel a difference just from the probiotic. And I guess that my point is, here's a real life story validating exactly what you said. Not that either one of us needed to validate it, but people will notice a difference at, like you said, bloating, or they're maybe less constipated, or maybe less diarrhea, or less acid reflux when they take a good probiotic, for sure.
Right, and very quickly. Very quickly. So if you do spend your money on one, and usually it has to do sometimes, you know, with getting like the lowest cost right off the bat, you know, very often the nicer the nice, the higher the price. Although what I find is even the very, very good ones that do work well, you know, are on sale at times, so you can see what works for you. But in terms of the natural food, which is always my first approach, sometimes it's not for everybody, because you're right, the ones that are made like in the regular grocery store are very often full of toxic chemicals and preservatives. Yep. One thing that you want to read about on your label to see if there's any benzoates, because I often see there are benzoates in various commercial products, and we really don't want benzoates. So that would be sodium benzoate or potassium benzoate. So that would be a good one to not have in the brand that you choose. And again, either sauerkraut or kimchi. But you know, I have to say that our colleague, Dr. Andrew Weil, had a really great article on his website at one point about how to make your own. And some people, you know, making your own stuff is more work than you want to do. But this was, like, super easy. It was a very old-fashioned method where there's this ceramic pot that you buy, and you actually just throw cabbage in there with a little bit of salt, and you put pressure on it. And that's really it. And that makes your own fresh sauerkraut. So,
I love
and that's
it.
Loaded with really healthy probiotics.
Yeah, I love it, and that's me. I'm a from scratch kind of guy at my house. Like, I don't. There's nothing that I use in my house that came out of a, you know, prepackaged box or whatever. I have a killer little herb cabinet next to my stove that, you know, away from the heat, of course. But you know, I'm a firm believer in letting your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food, and that goes all the way, you know, to the spice cabinet that you're cooking with, or like you just mentioned. It's kind of cool. Like one of the we'll call it supplements in my, you know, how to help the body fight inflammation is actually one of my favorite herbs to use when I cook, and it's ginger. And I for me, I love the taste of ginger. Some people maybe don't, but ginger is one of those really powerful inflammation fighting the things that you can just add to your everyday diet. In the winter, I love to use it as a, actually all year round, I like to use ginger tea, especially when, you know, it's maybe middle of the day and maybe I'm a little more fatigued than usual. Ginger kind of stimulates circulation, but ginger is one of those things, and it's been studied for the topic of joint inflammation. You know, and there's a great example of, hey, there's a food that I can use as my medicine to help my body fight inflammation, which, again, is not just limited to joints.
It's so true. Well, we're going to take another little break right here as we allow our wonderful station, Progressive Radio Network, to identify itself and tell you about some of the other fabulous shows that you can listen to day and night on PRN.FM. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion with our guest today, David Foreman, the herbal pharmacist, and we will talk about some more of his favorite anti-inflammatories for arthritis and other inflammatory issues. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Progressive Radio Network, the number one network for those who care about the truth.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch all of my shows in the archives. You can find my archive programs at the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can call my personal archive phone number to hear the most recent 5 episodes of It's All About Food. Here's the number: 1-701-719-0885. Here it is again: 1-701-719-0885. Learn about how we can solve many of the world's problems today and do it deliciously here on It's All About Food.
Hi, I'm David Crowe, host of The Infectious Myth that airs at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on PRN. I use data to deconstruct the myths that infect the modern world. Myths within health and medicine, other areas of science, the justice system, society, media, censorship, and politics. Join me for challenging interviews and discussions. Listen live, as a podcast, or by dialing 701-719-0990. Thanks for listening.
Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
Welcome back once again for more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're so happy that you are with us. We love you to listen and we love you to join the conversation. And you can do that by visiting us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And you can listen to the archive shows on prn.fm or by phone if you call 701-719-0884. That's 701-719-0884. Put that on your phone or wherever you keep numbers. You can call that at any time and hear live on the phone, really, any of our archive shows. I think it goes back for about 5 or 6 weeks, and you can catch them that way. So that's really nice. So you can hear the whole show right on your phone, in your car, or wherever you are. And today, our guest is pharmacist David Foreman, known as the Herbal Pharmacist. You can find him at herbalpharmacist.com or facebook.com, The Herbal Pharmacist. And he also is on Twitter at HerbalRPH. So thank you for coming back with us once again, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dave.
Oh, thank you again. And, you know, while we were taking the break, something jogged my thought process. And one thing you brought up earlier that we commented on, we both really enjoy the fact that, you know, the Mayo Clinic had you know, published the information and the journal articles. And, you know, we were talking about inflammation, and two of my favorite supplements to use for more specifically the people that have joint inflammation, two of the more popular ones, I use one of them every day, but two of them had journal articles published in the Journal of Rheumatology. And, you know, where else would you want to find your supplement information, you know, that's backed by science, but, you know, published in the Journal of Rheumatology? And the two are an ingredient called Selidrin, which that's the one that I actually take. And I'm using it actually today because I don't know what I did at the gym yesterday, but I believe I pinched a nerve in my neck, so I've got a little stiff neck today. I changed up my workout. But Selidrin works topically and orally. Topically, it works usually within 20 minutes to help people that have that discomfort that maybe your normal supplements or things aren't working. And then orally, I use it because I found as I got to about the age of 50, my hips and my knees, which is common in men my age, have what I call creaky joints. And a lot of that has to do with the lubrication of the connective tissue, the spongy stuff in my joints. And so Selidrin is one of those things that's shown to help with the lubrication of connective tissue. And then the other supplement is called Cat's Claw, And again, that one was published in the Journal of Rheumatology. And this one actually really appeals to me in the area of people that have rheumatoid arthritis, because cat's claw, which dates back to the Incas, we didn't talk about them, but this dates back to the Incas, in studies, it's shown to have an effect on the immune system in a positive way. And for people with rheumatoid arthritis, you know, we didn't describe that one earlier, but rheumatoid arthritis is an inflammatory condition caused by your immune system being hyperactive, or basically your body's all screwed up and your immune cells are attacking healthy cells. And in this case, the healthy cells they're attacking are the connective tissue. And so cat's claw is one of my favorites because it not only does help with that joint swelling and stuff, but it also has a positive effect on that hyperactivity that the immune system has. And again, those two supplements, Celadrin and cat's claw, you know, they've got studies published in the Journal of Rheumatology.
Well, I have to say, I completely agree. I think Celadrin is a great thing for people to look at. Now, that is an ingredient that is made. It you know, it's sold to supplement manufacturers, so there's right. all different kinds of people that offer that as a product, so you can read the different labels. But what's phenomenal about Celadrin is it really seems to be very effective both topically as well as internally. So if you have a concern about using it along with pharmaceuticals that you may be on already, you certainly can try it topically. So
oh, yeah.
I love Celadrin. I can't believe the and also, you know, I often lecture, since I'm old now, you know, I often lecture to groups of people who are in their golden years, let's say, and they are often on lots of pharmaceuticals, so they have some concern, and of course their doctor points out, don't mix drugs and herbs, but they do really well with topical Celadrin for starters.
Yeah, I tell you what, one of my favorite areas to recommend topical Celadrin is for those people who have that pain that keeps them from being able to fall asleep or making them wake up at night. I'll have people use, and that's a lot of people. Think about how many over-the-counter pain relievers that people take that have something that helped them sleep as well, you know, like Tylenol PM or Advil PM or whatever they're called. And I'm not saying those things are horrible. Actually, I would, but I don't want to get too political on this one. I think
okay. We say that here.
All right, so yeah, I think they're evil and you shouldn't necessarily take them. But, you know, those things are for help. And Celadrin doesn't help you sleep. But what I use it for is that I tell people use it like 20 to 30 minutes before you go to sleep. And that way, when you lay down, you're getting, that's the beginning of the easing of the discomfort you're having. And like you said, Ellen, I don't know, I'm unaware of it, you know, interacting topically with any medication. And so,
oh, and there's really good, I mean, it's been studied well and published well. So that is a very exciting, something that would be more of a newcomer to the anti-inflammatory grouping of remedies that can be really, really helpful.
Yep, and I had a knee injury. I was running a bunch of half marathons as a fundraiser for a nonprofit called Vitamin Angels years ago, and I had a freak accident within 100 yards of my hotel. I didn't see that the sidewalk dropped down onto the street, and I hyperextended and tore a ligament in my right knee. And I can tell you that a good portion of the healing process was me taking Celadrin by mouth. And then even now, once in a while, I'll have, I played 36 holes of golf and walked, and then my knee did bother me a little bit because I did above and beyond what I normally would have done. And that's when I'll use the topical just for that extra kick to carry, you know, to get me through and until the rest of everything else I normally do, addresses my inflammation. Like I eat turmeric in my diet, but if I don't, I take it. That's another really powerful natural anti-inflammatory that people can use as a food. But hey, you know what? You can use it as a supplement too.
Right, and there's a lot of discussion, of course, often by the industry that sells pills about the fact that really very little of the active anti-inflammatory curcuminoids are absorbed through food. But I am not so convinced about that because I really see a difference with using it as a spice, and you can always use it as a spice the way it's used traditionally in the Ayurvedic system and just in Indian cooking in general, is that it's mixed in with warmed oil and black pepper.
Right.
And it's so interesting to find out scientifically that taking it in an oil base along with black pepper really does enhance absorption, although I'm sure they were doing it more for flavor than any other reason.
But it's funny. If I was in the studio right now with you, I'd give you a high five on that one, because it's funny because people, you're right, in Ayurvedic or in Indian cooking, they're not just using turmeric. There's pepper, like in curry. There's peppers in curry, and they're cooking it in an oil. And yeah, so it's so funny that I think too often we focus in on one, and that's the modern medicine thing. I think we focus in looking for that one little thing and don't realize that, you know, in this population over thousands of years, the reason they didn't develop this condition was because they did these things on a daily basis, not because they drank a glass of red wine, you know, or they ate ginger, or, you know, like it's a balance of all those things that got them to be, you know, living to whatever year, or not having arthritis or not having heart disease. And so I'm glad you brought up the black pepper and the cooking technique, because that does play a role in it.
It does. And then, of course, there are supplements that offer a combination with, you know, piperine, which is an active constituent of black pepper, along with curcuminoids, which are the actives in turmeric, in an oil capsule. So that might be good, too. But do not be afraid of doing food first, because I think that is really the more sustainable way to go. And how I use supplements is we do use them with our clients, but I'll use them really as targeted and temporary sort of inputs, you know, and as we move more and more towards balance, and if the person wants to work with diet, then we move more to diet. Not everybody does, so, you know, everybody has their own choice.
Yeah, well, that's true, and I mean, I see that all the time, and it goes back to my whole thing of people want a pill to cure their ill. You know, it's a lot easier to just keep taking capsules of herbs and other supplements for some people than to stop eating, you know, refined processed foods, high in sugar, high in starch, or to cut back on the volumes of animal protein, or they don't want to eat salad because it's a pain to make, or, I mean, there's so many different things that, you're right, there is that group of people that just want to pop a supplement. And you know what?
Nice to work. But you know, Dave, we're actually getting to the end.
Aww.
Of our So if you could give people the best way to get in touch with you before we sign off, that would be great.
Sure. One stop. Go to herbalpharmacist.com, H-E-R-B-A-L, pharmacist, like that person at your drugstore, herbalpharmacist.com. Click on Contact Us. You can connect to me through Facebook, Twitter, follow my blog, and you can email me directly. Like I said, it's all right there on my website for you.
Thank you so much, Dave Foreman, and thank you for being the Herbal Pharmacist and for being with us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you so much.
You, listeners, for joining us. Please get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. We love to hear from you. We love you. And until next time, we hope that you stay healthy.